The hour of 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order on this beautiful Thursday morning. Representative Elkins, would you please move the minutes?
Mr. Chair, I would be happy to do so.
Thank you, Representative Elkins. Representative Elkins moves the minutes of April 29th, 2026. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Elkins. And members, we have an agenda today that we will just start at the top, as far as I know, here and work our way down. So, Senate File 4455, Representative Altendorf, if you could please join us at the desk. I see that there are no witnesses at this point. Chair or Representative Altendorf, if you could please, I will move Senate File 4455. If you could please present your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Davids and Chair Gomez and members. Senate File 4455 is a local government bill. There was the reason why this first went to our elections and local government on March 23rd, and we passed it out of there. And then it said it was asked that I would bring this back to the tax committee because there was some tax implications in it. On the Senate side, to compare, this bill went through the state government. On the Senate side, it had its second and third reading, and it passed as a final bill 65-0. The history of this is Lake City became a port authority. The Minnesota legislature approved that, and this was right before COVID, and part of officially becoming a port authority, you file some paperwork with the Secretary of State. Unfortunately, when everything was closed down and people were not in the offices, something happened between Lake City filling out the paperwork, getting it to the Secretary of State, and we're not really sure of that history. I'm not sure it matters. But all this bill does is it extends so that they can file the paperwork by January 2027. So it is, I would call it a fix-it bill. To bring this bill to taxes, just to kind of give you the background on that, in Minnesota state statute, broadly, anywhere where you become a port authority, you do have taxing authority. When we did the fix-it bill, because our constituents in Lake City, they did not like that an unelected board, which would be the Port Authority Board, would have the ability to tax. That is the only stipulation in this bill that's related to taxes, is to have no tax authority. That's it.
Thank you very much. Is there anyone in the audience wish to testify for or with concerns on the bill? Would the department like to weigh in? You're okay? Oh, you didn't say you're okay. You said you didn't need to check in at this time. Yeah, okay. Could be a difference there. Member questions. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Yeah, as Representative Vice Chair Altendorf mentioned, we did hear this bill in the Elections, Finance, and Local Government Committee. It was pretty straightforward. Nobody had any concerns with it there. I don't know exactly what the process is now that it's in the tax committee, but certainly substantively, this is a reasonable bill.
Okay, thank you. Any other member questions? Let's have the committee talk just a little bit about it, and thank you for those words. If we sent it to the general register, it'd have to go to rules, correct? And things aren't doing too well in rules right now, just to put it that way. So maybe it's best to keep it here and talk about putting it in the omnibus bill. What would the committee like to do? Chair Gomez.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I mean, I appreciate Chair Freiberg's weighing in on it. If he thinks it's good, I'm happy to just agree to it, but I do think we should probably keep it in our possession just since it contains a tax provision. And
okay, so let's talk about that a little bit, because it came off the general register. If it goes back to the general register, now somebody correct me if I'm wrong, gently, please. I mean, I want to make sure this gets done. So if we say move it to the general register, it has to stop at rules, right? I believe it does.
Yeah.
And I know how that's going, right? I don't want to do anything to hurt this bill. Representative Lee, and then Swedzinski, and then Hollins.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I guess the other question is what it seems like, I think the author mentioned this bill passed the Senate, and if it passed the Senate as a standalone, we could just concur in the House.
Yes. Oh, true. So it's passed the Senate as a standalone.
But I don't know. So it's I don't know if it would pass the Senate as a standalone or in the Senate omnibus.
Allendorf, could you address that?
Chair Davis, yes. It has passed the Senate 65-0 in the Senate as a standalone.
As a standalone.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It sounds like maybe we should lay it over, have some discussion about the process on it. And then, I mean, if it's if everybody agrees that it works, I mean, we could... We're the tax committee. We can meet and bring it back up.
We can do whatever we want.
We can do whatever we want, from what I understand.
Plus, we will have another hearing. We could bring it, we could talk about have another hearing sent to the where it needs to go.
Yeah, we could. We'll work on it. But
let's do that.
Yeah, I think
is that okay, Representative Altendorf?
Chair Davis, Chair Gomez, I appreciate your time. We brought it to the tax committee just because we wanted to make sure that there was not any problems. This bill contains three local government, very simple. They're fix-its, no cost to the state. So any way to get that through in the end of the day, I appreciate that.
And thank you. So I think what we'll do is I'll renew my motion that House File 4455 be laid over for possible inclusion with a caveat that we need to get this done. So. With that, we'll lay it over. Thank you so much, Representative Altendorf. We will work on this for you. Okay, item next. Let's see here. House File 5040, Representative Anderson, if you could present your bill. So Representative Anderson moves House File 5040. And I see there's a DE1 amendment. Mm-hmm. Representative Anderson, is that your amendment?
It is.
Okay. So Representative Anderson moves House File 5040. Representative Anderson now moves the DE1 amendment, H5040DE1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We now have the bill before us as amended to your bill. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll start out with the amendment. So when after this bill was filed, and there's been two. There's actually a clone. We have 70 authors in the House. This is completely bipartisan. In the Senate, it's the same way. It's completely bipartisan. After we filed, we met with the Department of Revenue. We wanted to talk through, the functionality of this. We wanted to make sure this would not be any burden on the Department of Revenue. We wanted to go over any sort of data practices issues, et cetera. And so they were wonderful, and we worked together, and we came up with the DE, which just includes language. Really, it's kind of how it would be done. I can answer questions if people have specific things. But we call this a Take It Back Act. As we know, there have been huge sums of money that have been stolen by fraudsters from our public programs. Those dollars belong to the taxpayers. Those dollars belong to taxpayers, and they should be either given back to the taxpayers or spent on public programs, which is the original intent that we had as a legislature, that they would be spent on people who need them. Instead, we have had a huge amount of fraud, taking those dollars, spending them and personal things, wasting them. I mean, we all know what's been going on. The Take It Back Act says we want our money back. So if you are convicted of fraud in a court, defrauding our public programs in the state of Minnesota, you will have to pay 100% tax on those dollars that they find that you stole, 100%. This is how we get our money back. Right now, there's potentially courts are ordering some restitution, but they're not ordering all the dollars back to the state and to the citizens of Minnesota. So that's what this is. This is a bill that says if you're going to defraud public programs, there's going to be a huge penalty, and it's going to come in the form of a tax increase or a tax on the entire amount that you defrauded state taxpayers. I can stand for questions. I do want to report this bill passed the Senate Tax Committee, and then it went to Judiciary. They didn't have any other changes. It passed unanimously. It's bipartisan in the Senate. It's sitting on the General Register, and I understand this language was included in the omnibus tax bill that was released this morning, or was going to be released if it hasn't been yet, by the Senate. So they are completely on board in the Senate. It's 100% bipartisan. I don't know if you have any questions of the Department of Revenue, but they can answer any if folks have. So.
Okay, thank you, Representative Anderson. Is there anyone in the audience who wish to testify for the bill or with concerns? Would the department like to weigh in? Yeah, okay, please join us at the table.
Representative Anderson, won the lottery.
She's good. She's good. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the Legislative Director for the Department of Revenue. And Mr. Chair, members, we just want to thank Representative Anderson and Senator Sikorski for working with us on this. When we first saw the bill, they reached out, and we just really appreciate their partnership to make sure that we can administer something like this. And so just want to say thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Questions for members. We're on the members' questions. Representative Joachim and then Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And while the Department of Revenue is up, could you maybe please explain a little bit how this would be administered?
Ms. Bears.
Sure. Mr. Chair, Representative. So one of the things that we currently do, so there's two parts to this. One is a 100% tax and one is a penalty. So if there is a conviction of tax fraud, that agency would certify the amount of the conviction, they would send it to us, and then we'd apply 100% tax through a tax order or tax adjustment. The penalty piece comes through when we are reviewing returns or we get a tip, as a lot of the time that occurs, and we review it and find that there's program fraud, then we can assess up to, assess 100% penalty. So a lot of that comes through our normal work that we're currently doing, as working with the BCA and others on in kind of fraud issues.
Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious.
Thank you, Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a couple of questions on this. The first one is, I'm interested in this penalty piece because it has been my experience that there is quite a significant lag time between filing periods and when you incur some sort of penalty. And so I'm wondering, is this actually more effective than, say, what the courts are doing in asking to pay restitution, given that, I made a mistake on my taxes once, and the state of Minnesota got back to me, 3 years later, and were like, hey, you need to pay $700. So I'm wondering, is this the most effective way of going about it? And then my second question is, I find this letter that's in our packet very compelling. The idea that the money would go back to the general fund as opposed to the specific program that it was taken from. I think it's a valid question, right? Nobody's more upset about this than those of us who allocated that money, right, to the place that it was supposed to go to take care of the people of Minnesota. And so I think it's pretty compelling to say that we should move any money that is recovered from that fraud to go back into that program to help support the people who actually need it. Less of a question, more of a statement, but the first one is a question.
Okay, any response from the
author?
Thank
you, Representative. Can you, your first question again was?
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, sorry, Mr. Chair. The first question was sort of the lag in time, and is this the most effective way of getting sort of that penalty through, mm-hmm. as opposed to the restitution process that the courts put in place as soon as somebody is convicted of fraud?
Representative Anderson, or?
Either way. we could both. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and then Representative Hollins. We can both answer that. We'll probably answer slightly different. This is over and above a restitution order. So this is money that would, it's 100% tax on 100% of the fraud that they are convicted of. So this is over and above any restitution order. I think Ms. Bears can talk about the ability of the Department of Revenue to actually be quicker in going after these dollars than an order for restitution, which is, you know, on their time rather than forced. So,
Ms. Bears.
Mr. Chair, Representative. So the way when we looked at this, we did it in a way that was legal, that we felt that was legally sound and that we could administer in an efficient way. And so I think when a conviction comes over, we'll be able to assess that tax right away. That wouldn't take, you know, we'd be able to see it and we'd assess it right away. With the penalty, it's going to come as we would find other types of program fraud. And so, you know, we have our own criminal investigation that does a lot of that work, which is based on, like I mentioned before, tips and other information that we have available. And so there is maybe some lag time, but we also think that, you know, with the general public, you know, finding us of tips, we're a little quicker than just a regular audit would be.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so that gets to a further question. As I dig into this, I have more and more questions. So if we're looking at things based on tips from the public, isn't there a risk that in the penalty situation, right, isn't there a risk that, like, there will be a bunch of maybe unverified tips that are then sending the department down these rabbit holes that waste a lot of taxpayer time and money to look into what may be fraud but may not be? I kind of worry. Anytime I hear a tip situation, I worry about bad faith actors and, you know, sending them after people they don't like.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you. I'll start and then I think we'll go. There's two parts that one is the convicted, so that's not a tip. That is an absolute conviction of fraud for a set dollar amount.
Which I think
that's the main thing. The other is the tip, and I think Ms. Bears can talk about the fact that they probably get them all the time and you can't just act on a tip, but yeah.
Ms. Bears.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Yes, we already have a tip line where folks can submit their tips, so if you hear anything, please use that tip line. We also get information from other agencies as well, as they will report under the executive order by the governor that was issued in October. Every agency that suspects some type of fraud that's being submitted to the BCA also has to report to the Department of Revenue. And so we're getting them from a lot of different areas and always review thoroughly when we receive those, regardless of where we get it from.
Representative Hollins.
No further questions. Thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to mention, because I'm the author of the Fraud Restitution Fund, which passed last year, kind of curious the order of operations here, because we also want to make sure that that fund, you know, gets the money it needs so that we can compensate people, you know, regular Minnesotans who have been frauded.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know the answer to that, maybe.
Ms. Bears.
Mr. Chair, Representative. So it would go by priority. When we have a lien filed for a claim for any type of tax, there is a priority set in statute. So, you know, without knowing for sure, it's likely that restitution would probably get collected first. It really depends on, like, you know, the court, things like that. So it would likely go with restitution, would likely get the restitution, and then any other kind of encumbrance that might be, or, you know, priority that's taken regarding what type of property it is and who filed it. But I would assume most of the time it's restitution that's taken first, and then ours would come into play, depending on other factors.
Representative Lee. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair. So I just want to clarify. So this is not just fraud that is involving public money. This is tax fraud across all sectors, like a private company that's not getting any public money but is convicted of tax fraud, of lying on its reports or something along those lines. This bill would also apply to those organizations as well?
Ms. Bears?
No. Mr. Chair, Representative, no. So we already do tax fraud in general tax fraud. This extra 100% penalty would only apply to public fund fraud. So like any public funds that were found to be fraudulent, that's when that penalty would apply, and only apply to the funds. So if there was tax fraud that was mixed in, we'd only apply it to the amount that would have been considered public funds, if that makes sense. It wouldn't be to all of the taxes.
Representative Smith.
Okay, no, that's my question.
Representative Witte.
Thank you, Chair Davids, and thank you, Representative Anderson, for bringing it. First of all, impressive to have 78 co-authors like that. So, but you know, we've talked a lot about fraud, and I guess obviously we want to do. I'm in favor of doing whatever we can to prevent the fraud from happening. Ms. Barris, do you think this is a good tool that's going to help you guys identify some of the fraud that we've seen in the state?
Ms. Barris.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it's another tool in our toolbox that we can use to help with the fraud, yes.
Representative Whitty.
Thank you. And I, you know, I think that's part of, as we're looking at this and how expansive it is, it's helping you guys have the tools to act on it and help the taxpayers of Minnesota. So thank you.
Any other questions for members? And thank you, Ms. Barris, for your help here. Okay, if there's no other questions, we'd like to wrap it up. Representative Anderson.
I will. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The main things I hear from, and I know we all do, from our residents is, you know, what happened to all the money, and we want it back. This is one way that we can start getting the money back. We need to make fraud expensive for fraudsters. We need to do everything we can so that they think twice about defrauding our programs. And this is one other tool that we can use to have them think twice and maybe not do it in the first place, and also to get some of these public dollars back to our citizens. So I ask for your support. I wish we were trying to get this sent to the General Register, but I don't know if that's going to happen today. So, is the plan to lay the bill over?
Yes.
Okay. So, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your bill. You've done a lot of work on this. And Representative Anderson renews her motion of House File 5040 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Anderson. And Joanna Barris for your help on that one. Let's go next to Representative Schwartz, House File 5071. Welcome to your committee, Representative Schwartz. Representative Schwartz moves House File 5071. And I do not see any amendments. So, Representative Schwartz, we'll get people seated there.
Good morning, members.
If you could please tell us about your bill.
Yes. Good morning, members. Thank you, Chair Davis and Chair Gomez. I know this is sales, local sales tax 101 that we've heard the last few weeks. I appreciate your time this morning. This bill addresses existing voter-approved local sales tax in St. Peter. This is already an existing bill. It does not create a new tax. Instead, it updates the city's current authority to reflect real projects, costs, and community priorities that have evolved since the original approval. This bill will allow St. Peter to complete critical public safety investments, including the fire station and improvements to Gorman Park. They are not new ideas. They are projects the community has supported, and this bill ensures they can be completely responsible. I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative. Who'd like to go first? Todd Prafke?
Mr. Chair, I'll go first. I am Councilmember Brad DeVos from the City of St. Peter.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I thank the committee for having us today. And special thanks to Representative Schwartz for authoring this bill. As the representative pointed out, this is not a tax increase. This is an existing sales tax that's in place. We are looking for actually tax relief for our residents. In 2020, when we initially moved forward with this sales tax, we expected it to cover 2/3 of our fire station. It is covering all of the debt for that fire station, and we would like to use that access towards a regional park that is going under significant renovation. Without the reallocation of the excess of the sales tax, we will be required to put this onto the property tax. So I say this is tax relief because it will avoid a property tax increase required to pay for this. I'll turn it over to Representative Sherstrom, or Councilmember Sherstrom.
Councilmember, please state your name for the record.
Dustin Sherstrom, Councilmember, City of St. Peter. I would like to thank everyone for their time. I don't have a lot to add that Councilmember DeVos didn't, except I would like to point out that we are very happy to have had this to have the sales tax go as well as it did. And we really firmly believe in having local say in our taxation. We like the fact that our voters supported the sales tax option. We like the fact that it was as effective as it was. And we would like to reallocate these funds to finish the Gorman Park project that is already halfway done. And the first half of the project was fully funded without using any of the sales tax option.
Okay, thank you. Any other testifiers? Okay, thank you very much. Anyone from the audience that would like to testify on behalf of the bill or with concerns? Does the department wish to weigh in? No? Okay. Not at this time. Okay, so we will go to member questions. Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is actually either, I think, for the author first. Is there Representative Schwartz? I appreciate you bringing this forward. We always want to do what we can for our cities. And St. Peter did the heavy lifting, and I want to thank you for rehabbing your fire station. I know it had a tremendous amount of work to do. You were on a corner. The egress and ingress was not great for your fire trucks. You didn't have the shower facilities to help your firefighters decontaminate. So I just want to thank you for what you're doing for public safety. So my only question on this, though, and I love parks too, but Representative Schwartz, why did you choose not to have this go back to the voters since you're modifying it so much?
Representative Schwartz.
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time?
Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schwartz, is there a reason why you're not going most usually in some of the other laws we've seen in front of committee when there is an adjustment? For instance, for Edina, one of the cities I represent, they go back to the voters to change that. So I'm just wondering why that wasn't a choice for you.
You can certainly answer, but I think that's more for some city folks, why there's no, you didn't go back to, Representative Schwartz.
I actually had in-depth conversations with the city, and this is a route that they chose to take. And so I did what I was supposed to do, represent my city, and this is how they want to go forward with this. This is how we're going to. So this is why I'm here. So.
Representative Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe then I should ask the city, was that why was that choice made, or was it just a decision by the council?
Mr. DeVos.
I'm sorry. I apologize, Mr. Chair, for interrupting you. So I'll just say I was surprised that a referendum wasn't part of it. As I would say from a city council perspective, Mr. Sharstrom can weigh in as well. I wouldn't have any opposition to a referendum. The first referendum passed with almost 87%. I would say the second referendum would end up being the same.
Yes, sir. Provide some insight. Part of it is timing. When you look at it, we already did phase one of the project, which was $1.2 million. Phase two is scheduled to be done this summer. So it was more of a timing of doing it. And if we were to put it to a referendum, we would have no problem with that. We have a very high level of confidence that the city would continue to support it. This is the staple park in our community. Phase one has been wildly successful, and the community is looking forward to phase two.
Chair Youakim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I'm thinking that as this goes along the way, that might need to be put in there. There are significant changes. I'm all for the project myself, but I believe that this might need to go back to voters. We'll have discussions about that. If you have no problem with that, 87%, that's almost like my reelection numbers. In my dreams. When I'm on a polls, I get 87.
You were very
okay,
happy.
Okay, Representative Hewitt.
You both are thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry I was late for the session today, the committee today. To the testifiers and Representative Schwartz, I'm just going back to the fire, this is an ongoing problem that all of us members should be digging into. And we get multiple requests and bonding on fire departments because of what the new standards are. It's not just the fire department and some garages. It's now keeping the equipment away from the exhaust. It's a place to wash the equipment. When I was still on the fire department, you threw on your coat, and whoever had the most soot on their coat was actually a senior person. But that's not the thing we have today. We have, because we know that cancer is causing a lot of these, and our firefighters and things like that, that the cities now are forced to have to move forward with this, and this is like the sleeping giant of how do we look at these situations that that our cities are facing. To the city, or to the Representative Schwartz, did the city look at working with the neighboring communities? I don't know if your fire department just covers St. Peter, or does it cover is it a regional asset to like townships that don't have fire departments? Can you kind of tell me a little bit more about that?
Who'd like to handle that one? Mr. DeVos?
Sorry, that was kind of long.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, just basically, does the City of St. Peter's Fire Department cover more townships? Is this a regional asset, or is this more of a just their? You guys only go out on mutual aid if called upon by anybody else. You stay in the area of St. Peter.
It is a regional asset. We do cover the surrounding townships. We also go up and down 169. So we cover north of Highway 169, south of Highway 169. We do cover the adjoining townships, and there is also mutual aid to the other surrounding cities. So.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's exactly what I think we have to look at as a state when we look at investments in fire services. Is this a regional asset, and how big of area is it covering? Because one more question to the city. Did you look at a bonding? Did you request bonding on the fire station by any chance?
Council member?
I'll defer to Todd. Yes.
Can you tell me when that was?
I can't tell you the year, I believe it
was. Excuse me, who's talking?
My name is Todd Prafke. I'm the city administrator in St. Peter. Okay. So I believe it was in 2018. This was a pursuit by the city council that was decided upon. The reason for the need for additional funds has to do with the facility's construction during COVID, not related to the financing mechanism.
Representative Hewitt, I think that I killed that in the bonding bill.
What did you say, Chair?
I think I killed that project in the bonding bill. Fire hall should not be in bonding bills. Yep. They should be right here.
Nope, and I totally get that, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to ask, and it shows the strain a city such as St. Peter, who has a large population as it is, and then they also have a school on top of it, mm-hmm. has multiple emergency requests in the cities, and also now that they cover townships. Again, looking at this, we're moving into another phase. Like I said, these fire stations have to be brought to code. They have to be brought to the standards of firefighting. Representative Joachim, the Chair Joachim, has done a number of bills, or a big bill on firefighter cancer. I think that this is where our place is right now, and as I'm going in my place. Now, I do have one question about the park, because we heard a large story earlier about Rochester's park and how the voters were upset that basically the city council changed the angle on to what the park was presented as and what the park actually is starting to become. Can you kind of relate to, is this, it sounds like this did not go before the voters, but what's your city support on this park?
This would be a good one Councilman? For me to, this would be a good one for me to answer. I serve on our Park and Rec Advisory Board, and this park is actually replacing the park called Tremendous that was built directly after the tornado. And it was built with community support, volunteers, and it is the central hub right outside our community center. This is where every middle school kid walks down to after the school day. There are cars lining the street. So we actually developed the park to reflect the Tremendous look. And then we actually had many stakeholders come to the table through open houses and having conversations about this. We actually had over 100 middle school age kids come down to weigh into what they wanted for this park. It also helps my day job. I'm a middle school teacher. So it was a little bit easier to recruit. So no, we didn't specifically vote on the park, but we did have three different options that community members were able to rank.
Representative Hewitt.
I don't want to take any more time of the committee, Chair. Thank you. That probably answered most of my questions.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question. In the University of Minnesota Extension's analysis of your local option sales tax, what percentage of of your tax would be paid for by non-St. Peter residents?
Who would like to handle that one?
We don't know the answer to that question. So.
Okay, Representative Elkins.
I will state, we do have one of the drivers of the sales tax was Gustavus Adolphus College. Being in the city of St. Peter, we have a lot of, basically a lot of the out of town students help support our economy, and both their parents coming into town and their spending in town was a large driver. And Gustavus is a major user of our fire station, so it was the sales tax is help. Part of the driver was getting financing through the spending of the Gustavus students. So.
The challenge that St. Peter has with taxes is because our largest industry.
Mr. Sharstrom.
Sorry. Because our largest driving industries are the state hospital, Gustavus, the school district, a large portion of the land within St. Peter is nonprofits. So when you look at it, if you put that on the property taxes, that becomes very, very challenging and disproportionately taxes the businesses and the homeowners within our community.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, just I think that this is information that we should be routinely being receiving in conjunction with these requests. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other members' questions other than Chair Gomez? Chair Gomez.
Thank you. So it seemed like Chair Joachim asked where the bill came from. You said the city, and then the city was like, oh, we didn't do it. So that was, can you just clarify that for me?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to clarify. We did make the request. The question was on the referendum aspect of it. I believe maybe Todd can speak to why a referendum wasn't in there.
Okay, let's get him a chair and a mic.
There we go. Not sure
my mic. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
My name is Todd Prafke. I'm the city administrator in St. Peter.
Welcome to the committee.
The basis for the request in this manner is that, as you see with some of the information that you've been provided, the original estimate from the Minnesota Department of Revenue was revenue generation on that half-cent sales tax, which is approved by the voters, was approximately $260,000 per year. You'll see, as a part of some of the information that we provided to you, that the actual revenue generation is in excess of $800,000 per year. This will allow us to defease the debt service on the fire station, provided that you allow us to ensure that we can provide for those cost overruns that occurred during COVID based on supply chain and other issues. And the council believed that it was appropriate to utilize those funds that were already approved for a regional park. This isn't just something that students in St. Peter use. This is a regional park, as the community center and Gorman Park is a regional area. So it seemed appropriate with the excess revenues to continue to ask for that. We wouldn't be opposed to a change or going to a referendum, but it seemed appropriate based on the revenue stream that's there. We'll be able to defease the fire station in half the time, less than half the time that we originally anticipated.
Chair Gomez.
Thank you. So did you pass the resolution changing these items? And
yes.
Submit it to yes. The committee?
City administrator?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Chair Gomez.
I must. When did you submit it?
City administrator.
I think it's January 31st.
Chair Gomez.
Is the deadline? I'm not sure.
City administrator.
So I am not sure when the deadline was, but it was submitted. The council took action on it in March.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Gomez.
So we just listen. There are very few requirements related to these in statute. You know, voters have to approve them. You know, your voters approved a certain amount of money and certain projects, and so going and changing it via statute without going to them is, you know, just the submission of a resolution and demonstration of regionality are very basic things that we just should expect that these incorporate. And, you know, I think that not all of us think this is the best way to fund every fire station in Minnesota. I think that we need to have a conversation about how it is, again, that we fund basic public goods. Because, you know, I sympathize with every, you know, mayor and city council member and city administrator and their equivalents at counties around the state who are struggling with the rising costs of goods and the fact that the contributions from the state are not keeping up with those rising costs, that, you know, there are big changes to come to social services that are, we're going to have to absorb, and you know, so it's not to speak to the worthiness of the project, but we have to do better, and you know, we have to have the courage to do the right thing on these, and so hopeful that we'll consider that and continue to have the conversation moving forward. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I've got a question for the city administrator. Are you going to reopen the Taco John's?
No.
Mr. Chair, just for clarity, if you'll give me a few moments to respond to your co-chair, we have a new bank that's being built there, and one of the requirements is that every time somebody makes a deposit through the drive-through, they'll be able to get potato Olays.
I love potato Olays.
Yeah. This evening. Yeah, I'm not sure how we'll enforce that, but we're working towards that.
So you'd like to respond to Chair Gomez?
If I may, the request for the fire station is really a request that was approved by the voters. They favored the fire station at greater than 80%, as you've seen. The challenge for us is that as that was approved and the numbers were submitted to the state of Minnesota and approval was given through this committee and other committees for the sales tax, that COVID happened and prices went up at that point. So we had already had to submit the numbers prior to that. And that's that kind of how we got caught within that, what some might argue is a cost overrun. For us, it wasn't a cost overrun. We understood what was being bid, but we had a time constraint that we had to work within.
Chair Gomez, any thoughts on that? Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, and one thing we will need to discuss in this committee at some point is when we say it's a fire station, it has regional significance. I don't know if it's really regional significance because it includes a few townships. Regional, when I have bills, I always say, you know, somebody visited from Canada, so it has international significance. That's how you got to do that, not just regional. So, yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, one thing I'd like to also point out from a regional significance perspective is our largest employer in St. Peter is the state hospital, the Regional Treatment Center. So we do have individuals from all over the state coming to it. We are, so in that way, our fire department is supporting in that way as well.
Okay. Thank you. And with that, would you like to wrap it up, Representative Schwartz?
Yes, thank you, members. This bill does not create a new tax. It just simply ensures that the city can complete critical projects like the fire station and the Gordman Park improvements at today's real cost without delays and funding gaps. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much, Representative Schwartz. Representative Schwartz renews her motion that House File 5071 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you to the good folks from St. Peter. Thank you, Representative Schwartz. Okay, let's go to the, before we have the final bill, Chair Gomez and I have a little presentation to make as a memory of being on the world-famous tax committee. If the pages could please come, and you get them too here. Where's the pages? If you could pass these out to the members. I've got the front table here.
Oh,
you got yours.
Thank you.
Now, members, what this is, and staff, what these are, this is a, it says, not just a committee, it's an adventure. Taxes with the Democrats and Republicans signed. And we didn't use a rubber stamp here, did we, Chair Gomez?
No, Mr. Chair, I think I wrote it with the most expensive pen I've ever held in my life.
It was this pen.
I hope you kept it.
It was this pen. No, she wasn't going to keep it. So it could be used as a coaster, a bookmark. And it's also, notice the fine design, it's also suitable for framing. So with that, I want to make sure mine goes back to the
office. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
One of the nicest coasters I have was designed by our gracious Winona State. Was this designed by Winona State?
It was not. Oh. It was not, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Okay. With that being, do people say that anymore? Pretty cool.
Far
that's
out, classic.
Awesome, groovy,
that's classic.
Groovy.
That'll never go out of style.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Good. Good.
I mean, timeless.
Pretty cool.
Thank you.
Okay.
People, you're my age.
Yes. Yes. The young ones. Okay. So with that, we have House File 5092, and enjoy your coaster, bookmark, suitable for framing item that you're getting.
I like this.
Welcome to the committee. We're very glad that you're here. Members, I will move House File 5092. And is the DE1 amendment yours?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Chair,
that is my amendment. Yes.
Okay, so I will move the H5092DE1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended in the shape the author would like. Two-year bill, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Tax Committee. So the bill in front of us today, now that it is amended, is the mineral article for this year. So how we kind of got to this is we have a huge opportunity in the Iron Range that we haven't seen for a very long time, and that is we have a new mine opening here in hopefully just a few short months that's going to be providing new job opportunities and more economic vitality to our region. But because a new mine's opening, it's on the Iron Range delegation to work together to make sure we appropriate our production taxes, which are in lieu of property taxes. So the bill in front of us was worked on in collaboration in a bipartisan way with the entire Iron Range delegation, along with communities across Iron Range, which you'll see in the letters and the testimony that we brought to you today. The biggest changes in the bill is making sure that the school districts that are going to be located around this new mine receive their appropriated production tax dollars that come from this mine, which is going to give them a huge shot in the arm, for especially as we know our school districts are really hurting across the state of Minnesota right now. And these schools are going to be directly, the kids that go to these schools will be working at this new mine. Where some of the money comes from, as I want to mention too, there's a Tekonite Economic Development Fund, and that's where we're able to stabilize and pull dollars from. Because the new mine that's opening is brand new, this fund was created to help invest in some of our old mines across the region. Being that this is a brand new state-of-the-art facility, what we were able to take there is with those funds is give increases for the first time in generations to school funds, to township funds, and to city funds across the Iron Range that benefit from this program. So this bill, as it comes together, is going to be one of the most significant impacts to the Iron Range that we've seen in generations because we have a new facility opening, and it's going to be increasing funding for our schools, cities, and townships in a way that desperately need it and hopefully bring more economic stability to our region. That is a brief kind of description of the bill, but, Mr. Chair, I do know I have a few testifiers from back home that would love to be able to tell you a little bit more.
Well, let's go right to them, if that's okay, Chair Igo. That's okay? Okay. Let's go to Mr. David Pace, Superintendent, Greenway Schools. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Chair David, Chair Goldman's members of the committee. I'm David Pace. I'm the superintendent of Greenway Public Schools. I am here in support of House File 5092, the Minerals Amendment, before you. These improvements will bring much-needed inflationary improvement to a production tax that benefits school districts throughout the Iron Range. Greenway Schools is based in Coleraine, Minnesota, a school district named after John C. Greenway, a prominent mining engineer and United States Senator who played a significant role in the development of iron mining in the region. The district serves several towns in the area, including Coleraine, Bovee, Taconite, La Prairie, Marble, and Calumet. The mineral articles strengthen support for school infrastructure by increasing contributions to the school Taconite Fund, the Taconite Railroad Aid, and the school building maintenance funds. These are not abstract dollars. They translate to facilities and facility upgrades to meet the educational needs of our students across the entire Iron Range. At its core, this legislation is a simple truth. When mining succeeds on the Iron Range, our schools and community must share in the success in a stable, predictable way. This bill provides increases to the school building maintenance fund. It is important to note that it has been many years since there's been meaningful increases in this production tax. This provision represents long overdue for our school districts to keep pace with the increasing costs of school maintenance. This increase will also provide additional reliable funding that allows us to plan responsible for our facilities to deliver high quality education without disruption. The mineral article is especially meaningful to Greenway. The dedicated allocation tied to a locally approved building bond project creates a pathway for long-term community-driven improvements. This legislation would also provide critical revenue to support a building bond effort of our 126-year-old high school building, a facility which our district has taken great pride in maintaining exceptionally well over the years. But local revenue and previous bonding isn't enough to provide updated modern HVAC, learning spaces, and improve our career and technical areas. This is pragmatic, forward-looking piece of legislation that supports economic development, respects the realities of starting a new mining operation within the borders of our school district, and most importantly, protects the educational foundation of the Iron Range communities. I thank you for your time and support.
Well, thank you, Superintendent. Let's go to, well, before we go to a virtual testifier here, is there anyone else in your audience who wish to testify for this bill or with concerns? Does the department wish to weigh in? Not at this time. Okay, so let's go to Barb Calmy, school board member, Nashua Keewatin Schools. And I believe we have you virtually.
Yes, you do.
Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent, please.
Barb Calmy, school board member for Nashua Keewatin Public Schools.
Welcome to the committee.
Chair Dave, thank you so much. Chair Davids, Chair Gomez, and members of the Tax Committee, thank you for the opportunity to allow me to testify today in support of House File 5092. As I stated, my name is Barb Calmy. I'm a longtime member of the Nashua Keewatin Public Schools School Board. I am also chair of the Itasca Area Schools Collaborative Executive Committee, and I am president of RAMS, the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools. I'm also a survivor of the 1985 closure of Butler Tech, where my husband was employed. It was a very dark time for my young family and our community. Families moved out of the area to seek employment. Our school enrollment dropped dramatically, and local businesses suffered. Many of them closed and are still closed today. For years, I drove by the abandoned mine site, hoping and praying for the phoenix to rise out of the ashes. And amen, it finally has. Today is a monumental moment in time, not only for my community, but for the entire Iron Range. For the first time in over 50 years, a new taconite mine and processing facility, Mesaba Metallics, is moving towards production on that very same property. This represents not only high-paying jobs for my region, but also critical employment, critical opportunities to strengthen the financial foundation of schools and communities. House File 5092 is about making us ready for that moment. It modernizes how production tax revenues are distributed so that schools, cities, and townships can finally see some relief after decades of flat or frozen funding. For our schools, the impact is significant. Some of these funding streams have not been meaningfully adjusted since the 1970s and the early 2000s. This bill begins to correct that by increasing distributions to key school funds. These changes help address the real cost pressures school boards like mine face every day. From a broader RAMS perspective, this legislation reflects the strength of regional collaboration. Our organization represents and advocates for over 70 units of government and school districts across northeastern Minnesota under the principle of one range, one voice. This bill lives up to that ideal. It has unanimous support from the bipartisan Iron Range legislative delegation and widespread backing from local communities. Importantly, it increases allocations for cities and towns. This bill helps stabilize property taxes and supports essential local services. I also would like to bring to your attention the forward-thinking elements of this proposal, particularly the temporary guarantee to ensure stable funding during the startup phase of Mesaba Metallics. In closing, I would like to reiterate just how impactful this piece of legislation is for our region. It's bipartisan, it's fiscally responsible, and it directly supports students, families, and communities across the Iron Range. I respectfully ask for your support of the House File 5092, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Okay, before we go to questions for members, I'm just wondering who usually wins the football games, the Raiders or the Spartans? Careful, Chair.
We are combined with Greenway.
For football?
In our football program. Yes.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
So everybody wins.
Everybody wins.
Okay.
Just like the bill.
Or loses. Yep. So with that being said, let's go to member questions. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Igo, for bringing this bill forward. I'm not going to even begin to understand everything we do with production tax, and it's amazing you got everybody on the same page. I'm just trying to understand it a little bit better. So the production tax from Mesabi Metallic was specifically go distributed to the school districts, or is there a portion that also goes into the fund for the cities and municipalities, or how does that work?
Chair Igo.
All right, so I'll try to be succinct and give you as straightforward answer as I can on that. There's separate accounts for everything, right? So some of it goes to, like what's directly named in this bill, like long-term facility maintenance account. So some of that money is going to go to taking care of the schools. Some's going to go to operating budget of the schools. Some's going to go to townships. Some's going to go to cities. It's all splintered out in different formulas and percentages. So that's why, like, the big meat of this bill is putting into law that when Metallics comes online, it goes to the schools that it's in, townships and cities that it's supposed to.
Chair Uaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And remind me, does some of the production tax also go to, I know it's in lieu of property taxes, and it should stay in the region where the property taxes are collected. So is IRRRB also kind of does that? So I didn't see a specific letter of support from them, but they're on board as well?
Chair Igo.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Joachim. So when it comes to the IRRR is going to receive funds as well from the production that'll be dispersed then throughout the region. I've been in contact with the agency. There's no letter of support today, but there's been no major concerns raised from the agency that I'm aware of.
Chair Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Many, many years ago, when I was an infant tax chair, I was going to master how the IRRRB at the time works and how the Iron Range funds are distributed. And in my great wisdom at the time, I just turned that all over to Tommy Rukovina and David Tomasoni. And I think that was brilliant. I don't know. It seems to have worked okay. So when I get things on this, it's just kind of like, okay, just if you got agreement, who am I to say? And I probably should dig in deeper on some of this stuff, but I also have a life. So with that being said, questions for members, we'll have Chair Gomez wrap it up. Questions from other members? You've done a lot of work on this, Chair Igo, and Representative Warwas.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I just want to thank Representative Igo for bringing this bill. Obviously, being a 30-year taconite miner myself, I appreciate everything that these production taxes do in our region. Iron mining is really the backbone of the Iron Range, as I think most of you know. And it's really, really critical for our schools to be able to get this funding as well. And, you know, happy to see Greenway and others coming online when Mesabi is able to produce the ore. Another thing of note that's pretty fantastic for the entire state is that a lot of these mineral leases are State of Minnesota, DNR, University of Minnesota. So we bring millions and millions of dollars to schools, every public school child across the entire state. And actually the company that I work for, which I won't name right now, but the company that I work for brings most of that money to those kids in this state. So very proud of that, and thank you for bringing this bill.
And I think you should also be recognized for your work on this bill with Chair Igo. Thank you to both of you. When I was first the Commerce Chair many, many years ago, the headline, I come to the Capitol, get the Minneapolis Tribune, and the headline is, 2,200 jobs lost at LTV Steel. I thought, oh, great. What do I do? So I called up Rukovina and Tomasoni, and we had a big, big meeting up there. And what we did was we continued unemployment benefits, and we also gave benefits for the two-year colleges up there that people could go get degrees. And it's devastating. There's such ups and downs, and hopefully we're in for some good times here. Because those were really rough, as the school board member said when her husband lost her job in the mine. So, okay, so that will have Chair Gomez wrap it up.
Yeah, thank you. I was looking, the reason I was digging around in my bag is because I was looking for my diagram of the accounts for the IRRR, and I think there's like 20 little boxes on the flow chart, and the chair kind of talked about this. It's like, you know, you get into it and keep finding all these little wormholes, you know, kind of these little carve outs here and there and different pots. And so it's really quite interesting. But I did, so one of the boxes, one of the 20 boxes is this TAC and Economic Development Fund. And, you know, so a lot of the kind of rationale, you know, for, you know, the chair talked about kind of the economic ups and downs. And, of course, our range delegation has also done that. And so I understand the justification for it. But I do think that there is a need to kind of, you know, to subject some of these to the regular scrutiny and the regular review of the tax committee also, because this particular one, the Taconite Economic Development Fund, was not an account that sent money in lieu of property tax base to the, you know, school districts, cities and townships and counties, which I think is the overall intent. Instead, it's a sort of like a, I mean, it's a slush fund for the companies. And, you know, I understand things develop over decades around here, and I'm just interested to learn more about some of the idiosyncrasies, let's say, in sort of the mineral taxes and these areas. So I'm really actually very pleased and thank the author and the authors for sending that money and excluding, you know, the new company from the Taconite Economic Development Fund and instead sending that money, you know, to the schools and townships and counties around in the area. So thank you.
And thank you very much, Chair Gomez. Would you like to wrap it up, Representative Chairman Igel?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Gomez, and really appreciate our conversation earlier this week to go over this stuff together, because I think we found a lot of commonality that we're going to probably work on for years to come on stuff like this, so I appreciate that. And appreciate you as well, Mr. Chair Davids, for your help on this, my colleague, Representative Warwas, but this is the entire range delegation coming together. I really want to establish, too, like these conversations, the reason we're in front of you at the end of April with this bill is because this is how long it took for us to make sure to go home and do our homework. That's why we have letters of support from each bookend of the range coming to support this bill, because we did it with collaboration and partnership and that ranger can-do mentality of unity. But this bill is going to be a shot in the arm for the region and really takes care of, hopefully, a generational impact that when members like me are gone and members like all of us are gone, we know that when we pass bills like this, we're looking out for a region of Minnesota that does a lot of hard work and does a lot of good for the entire country. So I thank members for the discussion today and for the support on the bill.
Thank you. I will renew my motion that House File 5092, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And with that, members, anything else for the good of the order? If not, good government all the time. We are adjourned.